Hey, a full house on both sides.
See, I'm 2 minutes early, John.
What?
I'm 2 minutes early.
You are 2 minutes early. I told her. This meeting of the Conference Committee on Senate File 26 will come to order. Lots of small things. Should we maybe start by introducing everybody around the table, just so people know who everybody is? So I'll start. John Marty, I'm chair of the Senate Conference Committee. Senator Fischbach has just stepped out for a minute, so she's over there.
Katie Kavanaugh, Senate Counsel.
Lynn Aves, House Research.
Representative Murkett from St. Paul.
Sai Tao.
Jen McNerney, Committee Administrator.
Laura Bluebaugh, Legislative Senate.
Tom Goldstein, Committee Administrator.
Lynn from Winona.
And we have a very simple conference committee, though it started out with a one-page bill in the Senate and came back with a 100-and-some page bill in the House, but that was kind of a...
We're a productive body.
Productive body. Prolific. Came back with a long bill that we have a list. You should have a list dated May 11th that says bills included in Senate File 26, which means the Senate bills that were included in the House version of Senate File 26. And there are lots of same provisions and a few similar ones and a few that are significantly different. And what I'll propose, and if that's okay with people, is that we start going through the three-page handout that's dated May 11th. It says Occupational Licensing Bills and has in the top row is Limited X-ray Operators Requiring a Specific Exam. And we go through and maybe adopt all the identical provisions as we go and then continue. Senate Counselor House Research, who wants to start going through?
I can. Mr. Chair, I think the first, if you look at House Senate File 26, and I think sections 1 through 6 are comparable to the Senate Bill 445 with the limited X-ray operators. And those, there are some differences, but it's my understanding that the Senate version is what's going to be accepted.
Is that the understanding of two authors?
Okay. And the A9 amendment would bring the House language into the Senate
version. Has that been?
Version. No.
Do you have it?
So A9 will be handed out, and then that Representative Tao would move that the A9 amendment and the House language for would be amended to the House language and adopted as the position for sections 1 to 6.
Right.
On that motion, is there any... Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Your bill.
Under exemptions, under this is all going...
No, we have that for...
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I was on the wrong page. The continuing ed.
That goes.
Okay, so the exemptions in here in section...
That goes for all...
But now, if this is pages 3 to 5, delete sections 3 to 6, that would go.
Oh, I'm sorry. We take the section 1 and 2 in the Senate language. And then... we delete section 3 and 6. So the 1 and 2, sections 1 and 2 in the House bill are identical to the Senate language. So by deleting House sections 3 and 6 and putting in this new section 3, we now have the exact same language as it sits in the Senate file 445.
But the exemptions would, I don't see
the exemptions are, if you look in section 2 here, that's already in here.
Okay,
so
that's right, on that last amendment.
Yes,
we
yes.
Okay, all right.
So it would be sections 1 and 2 from the House bill and section, and the A9 amendment
right.
would be the language. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? If not, Senator, Representative Tao moves the adoption of those sections. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Continue on.
Then the next section is... If you look in the Senate document, it's Section 4, and that's Senate only, and that deals with the Board of Medical Practice, and it requires an applicant to pass Step 3
page numbers
of the board
page
within
four.
5 years. And I think you just if you just turn to Section 4, it would be
the document that's upper right corner is PH018B3. Page 4, Section 4?
It's Section 4, page 4, right. And that is not in the House bill.
Okay.
There was no controversy over this?
No, and I think this was passed last year as well by both the House and the Senate.
Okay.
Hold on.
Is that fine with everyone?
Just one question. Mr. Chair, was this carried in a bill this year?
This was in...
Mr. Chair, it was in Senate File 44. It was not in the House bill. So, and I don't know what happened to the Senate, or the Senate File 44's counterpart over in the House.
You know who, Mr. Chair, who carried the bill?
Actually, you know, it was an amendment to Senate File 44 in policy, and it was Senator Lynch over here still.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is something both houses have passed before, and it was
both houses have passed it last year.
Okay. Senator Erickson Ropes, want to move that?
Sure.
Section 4 of the Senate bill. Senator Erickson Ropes moves that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Continue on.
And then, Mr. Chair, the next House sections 7, 8, and 9 through 12, and the Senate 5, 6, and 7 through 10 are all identical.
Representative Tao moves the identical language. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Chair, the next one is a Board of Chiropractic change. That's House only, and it's House Section 13. And this makes changes to the grounds for disciplinary action that the board can make. And I believe it permits the chiropractor to advertise or collect a fee or charge that's different from the fee or charge that's submitted to the third-party payer.
This is the last 2 years before this. Senator Cascade and I worked on allowing discounted payments, and this is a technical amendment that conforms the chiropractor's language.
And we had passed the main thing. This was the technical conformance.
Yeah. And the association is good.
Let me say for all these as we're moving on these, since we're moving fairly quick, if there's somebody in the audience who had concerns about something we're doing and doesn't think we got it right, please raise your hand or let us catch your eye.
Whoa, what's the official word?
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Okay, that's, say whoa. Representative Abler moves Section 13 of the House language. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Senator, I have to get a quorum.
Okay. Speech language.
Going?
Yep.
The next one is a speech language pathology and audiology section. It's House Section 14 and Senate Section 11. And the House has one additional sentence that includes that permits a letter from an academic department chair to show completion of the coursework. And the Senate doesn't have that language. And if you look, let's see. Section.
Go ahead, Mr. Vanasik.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Rob Vanasik here on behalf of the Minnesota Academy of Audiologists. We had done an amendment on the House side to get a concern for the Minnesota Department of Health. What we kind of figured out that after the fact, that amendment didn't work. So we reworked it and cleaned it up and amended the Senate file and asked that the conference committee take the Senate language in whole forget about the House language.
Okay. Is there, you guys are...
Sure. Okay. I'll move that.
Representative Tom moves Senate file, moves Section 11 of the Senate bill is the version. Any debate? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I believe that you were probably speaking as well as Senate Section 12, the next one as well.
Mr. Chair, this.
I think, yeah, that was with the extra paragraph, yes. B, that was what was fixed.
Representative Tao moves Section 12 from the Senate bill. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Order physical therapy.
Physical therapy, Section 16 through 18 and Senate Section 13 through 15 are identical.
Representative Tao moves that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next section is House Section 19, Senate Section 16. The Senate, there's a technical difference. The Senate has the correction in it that was just made on the floor. It's the number of members of the board. It was changed to 5 physical therapists, and the bill language still had 4, so we just caught another 4 that needed to be changed to 5.
Jim Town moves the Senate language.
What?
This is an odd job.
Right,
the extra job. Per diem, maybe.
It's a volunteer.
Representative Tao moves the Senate language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next is House Sections 20 to 37, Senate Section 17 to 34. There are several technical differences in this that we would recommend the House on that. Otherwise, they're identical.
Tom moves the House language on that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next is the Board of Physical Therapy fees. This is in the House bill. It's Senate doesn't have it. It is in the omnibus bill. The Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. I don't know whether you want to keep it in here.
Are there several fee things in
there
here?
Several of them.
Is it, put this bill at any risk that, it's the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill?
That's what's at risk.
Yes, that's probably more. There's no controversy over the fees that anybody.
Oh, they're balanced.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean somebody doesn't have
that. Oh.
You never know. Representative Tom moves the House language on the fees. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Then the next is professional licensed counselors, House 39 and 40, Senate 35 and 36. These are identical.
Representative Town moves those sections. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We did the next fees already.
And the next one is House Section 42. This licenses the professional clinical counselors, creates that new level of counselors. And the Senate doesn't have that. And I believe the reason is that it was with the mental health professional extension, so I think inadvertently when that was laid over, the licensing part was also laid over.
So basically everybody's agreeing the House language is appropriate.
Can I have an amendment for the dates? Is that part of this section?
No.
Not yet.
When that comes up.
Okay. Representative Tao moves the Section 42 from the House. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Then the next section is House Section 43 and Senate Section 37. The Senate adds a sentence requiring the professional clinic counselors to present evidence of completion of an equivalent degree that the House doesn't have.
It's the Senate language?
Yeah, nobody said
one. Okay. The Section 37 of the Senate bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Next is alcohol and drug counselor fees. This is House section 44 to 47. This is not in the omnibus bill, and it's only in the House bill.
Is there any controversy over this? Is, does anybody know anything about this? Representative Abel moves the House language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Board of Social Work.
The next sections, House sections 48 to 58 and Senate sections 38 to 48, these are all identical.
Representative Tom moves the identical sections. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Next section is House section 59 and Senate section 49, and this deals with the foreign-born applicants.
There are several potential amendments, one of which we will. Who wants to explain this?
I can.
Representative Abel, go ahead.
This is the issue a couple of years ago, maybe longer ago than that, is that there are some people that are immigrants, citizens, or people with work permits who are fully capable of being social workers, especially for the ESL populations, who, because of their language situation, couldn't pass the exam. So the board, several years ago, I don't know what year it was, 2001, worked out a way to get a variance. This actually updates that. And in the effort to update that, it's run afoul of immigration issues, which is absolutely not part of this discussion. It's simply a matter of helping Hmongs and others who have a great need for these services to get them. And so the House took out the sentence that caused a big flap in the Senate, but they should really try to pass a test. And that's the amendment, I think.
Well, there are several versions. I had prepared about four different versions so we could have some discussion of it all at once.
Language.
Get me them so I could see what we were.
There's copies
of them.
Okay.
One of the things, if we were to use the House language that passed on the floor, which I was supportive of, the board pointed out that the way the language is worded, it's such that, let's see, what page is that on? Is that
45 and 46. In the House.
As it is in the House language, yeah. If you read that, the top of page 46, there was a clause, the previous clause 3 was, has failed the pass the test twice within the last 12 months or something like that. And striking that and without making any changes in the rest leaves clause 3 saying has met all other requirements for licensure, because we took out the reference to the test, that would still be in there. So I have an amendment that was prepared that would at least fix that, so it basically would be if you were foreign-born, ESL, had met all other requirements other than the exam for licensure and complied with the requirements of these other sections, you could get the provisional license, which is a 3-year supervised provisional license. That would be one option for what to do. The next option would be to take the current law, which you can find on page, bottom of page 43 of the House language, which has applicant was born in a foreign country, taken and failed to pass the examination at least once since January 2000, ESL, and provides evidence to the board of compliance with all the other sections, and has letters of recommendation from two social workers and one professor. That expires this August, so the second option would be to extend that sunset to 2009, and another part of that would be to direct the Board of Social Work to do a study over the next year and a half, over how to increase the numbers of licensed social workers serving underserved communities, including but not limited to culturally and ethnically diverse communities, because the board has I think there's a shortage of social workers, not just in some ESL-related things, but also other cultural differences make some communities more, maybe they're, we think of tests as very objective, but sometimes they're culturally subjective as well. So this would have the board study that, and then the final option would be to do what I think is the one Representative Abor was suggesting, and that is that that you would, in effect, update the language of current law with similar to what the House had going, what the Senate has and the House had going into it, and that is that you have to fail the test once before you can go the alternative route. And I'll speak to what my concern was about, that we can have the board and others who want to comment on it briefly as well. My concern, the way it came into the Senate and what bothered me about it was we're basically saying you, the language in the Senate bill is you have to have failed the test twice in the last 12 months, which I gather was somebody's idea of making it tougher than having failed it once in the last 12 months. It bothered me for several reasons. One, it's saying we put somebody up for something. We're requiring failure in order to do this route. The board's recommendation after that objection and after that was put in the House, they came back with one saying you have to take the test, which that takes out the words about you have to fail the test in order to get the alternative route. But it also is a little misleading because I think most people, if you say you have to take the bar exam, the assumption is you have to pass the bar exam. You don't have to take it and fail it. And the board's enhanced supervision provision is more onerous to go through, and I think virtually every candidate would choose to take the test. The question is, do we want to put in statute that you must fail the test, which is basically current law? I was bothered by that because I think somebody who is very competent, and we want to, the goal of the licensure is to make sure we have competent people practicing. And the goal of the exception is to make sure that we can get as many people who are competent and able to serve underserved communities to become licensed as social workers. And if the goal is to get as many people licensed who are competent as possible, what benefit is there to anybody in terms of reputation of social workers, in terms of strength of the licensure or anything else to say you have to take and fail the test? And the logic that goes behind you should take the test and fail it as a requirement for getting the alternative licensure is the same sort of thing that says, well, why don't we make you have to fail it twice? I mean, then you could be really tough and make you have to fail it three times before you do. And I don't know, maybe nobody would think that being insulting to have to take a test and fail it, but I'm a little bit at odds with the board on that, so I wanted to throw out the options and we can have the board or others speak to it. But Representative Abor.
Senator, we're not far apart from how we look at this, but if we don't have some language about a test in there, as I read what the House now has, you could be born in Mexico City and speak Spanish and then move to Dallas as a four-year-old and own 17 clinics and not have to take a test. And I don't know, and that it would fit the criteria there, and the board would have to allow that person to get a license and just because they didn't want to get around to it. And so and that may be the limited exception to that. We think about exceptions. Are you comfortable with the version about at least taking a test and not?
Well, that's the one remaining concern I had. First of all, the person doing your scenario has to have gone through the 4 years, have to pass the thing, have to do this, and in both cases, that individual, if they're not going to pass the test, the two options are, one, they have to fail the test and get the enhanced supervision, or they have to get the enhanced supervision. In failing the test, I mean, you don't need to have any education to fail a test. I don't see what that adds. I think most people would choose to take the test because it is more onerous to go the other way. But saying in statute, we want somebody to fail it first before you do that, I don't see that. So maybe what we can have Mr. Merriman can speak to it because they came up with this, and if the conference committee thinks that's good, fine.
Mr. Chair, before
Representative Tell.
Mr. Merriman starts, maybe in his presentation he could address as to why we need a new language, you know, as the old language, is it because just the expiration date, or is it because it wasn't working for you? And so I'm kind of in favor of eventually maybe just adopting the old language and just extending it.
I'll speak one thing to that, too, and that is that the old language simply requires for the alternative licensure that you get some letters of recommendation that you are competent. And the board's new proposal, I think, is much better than that because it requires 3 years of enhanced supervision. The old version, I don't think it's a good idea to just extend the sunset on that, because there you could get, in Representative Abor's condition, in his example, you'd have to have passed the coursework in all these cases. But if the case you failed the exam, all you'd have to have would be some letters of recommendation. You wouldn't have any enhanced supervision or anything. But Mr. Merriman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Frank Merriman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. There's a number of issues here that I'll try to address. First of all, as far as Senator Marty's proposals go, the board supports 2 out of 3. That ain't bad. One is the technical amendment. We would also support his amendment to require the board to do a study on the diversity issue. The one area where we do not agree is on the examination. The board feels very strongly that applicants do need to require, or should be required to take the examination. And we have several reasons for that, which I'll just go through just very briefly. First of all, it is not true that everyone who takes the examination fails it, who are ESL foreign born. Many of them pass it. And so we think that's a relevant consideration. Secondly, for those who do have trouble passing the examination, there are resources to help them, including resources that are specifically designed to help foreign-born ESL people. So we think that's another relevant matter. Thirdly, we talked with members of the community, and we did not find anyone objecting to having to take the examination. There were objections to the nature of the examination, but not to having to take the examination. Fourthly, we feel that taking the examination is an opportunity to provide people with feedback on their strengths and weaknesses, because when they take the examination, they get a report from the National Examination Body that tells them where they were strong and where they were weak. Fifth, we feel that dropping the examination requirement, that is, not even having to take the examination, would delegitimize the model for other states. And we continue to be hopeful that the Minnesota model can be used by other states to help with their diversity concerns. And we just know from all the feedback that we've gotten elsewhere in the country that not requiring the examination would make it much less likely that this model would be adopted by other states. Finally, this would be strongly opposed by the board. If you did not require the examination, the board, quite frankly, has told me that they would rather not have an alternative method at all. That's just how strongly they feel about it. So we would strongly encourage you to do that. We would prefer that you adopt the language that Senator Marty has indicated that he's supportive of, except for the examination requirement. If you drop the examination requirement, we would prefer going with Representative Tao's proposal, just to stick with the present system for another 2 years so that we can look at these issues and come back. So that's kind of where the board lies. We also have Pam Lunenberg from the Coalition, who can tell you where the associations stand on the same issue.
My name's Pam Lunenberg, and Chair and members. I represent the associations. They sent me to the meetings that the board held on this issue, and we met for 6 years on this issue. And during that time, I had an opportunity to talk to just about everybody who's concerned about this, including a lot of people from the social work community. We really support everything that Mr. Merriman has told you today. And we really also commend the board for their sincere and in-depth work on this issue. The one thing I would add to, we also strongly favor taking the exam. we think that it is helpful to take the exam in terms of building support within the community because the exam is such an integral part of the licensing process. We believe it would build support for this whole alternative process if all social workers in the state had to take the exam and go through that process. We also think it's valuable for people to find out what part of the exam perhaps that they were struggling with and the feedback that Mr. Merriman suggested. I know that I've done supervision of social workers, and if I had a supervisee who had failed the exam, I would use that information and go over that with my supervisee and say, what areas can we really focus on and improve? And that I would use that as part of my supervision. So we do support taking the exam once and the other, all the other things that were today in it. Amendment. Thank you.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Berryman and Ms. Lindemann. I carry the bill on this side, and I guess I would speak in favor of the one test experience. And then deleting the language having to do with failure, just take the test, because I think once everybody understands what that means, the board, and you're going to be talking with every organization in the state of Minnesota, we're not requiring failure. I think that's bad language to set up in statute. But requiring people to take a test, I think, is fine. If they fail, then they get the opportunity to be shuttled into alternative licensing. And I really salute the board for bringing alternative licensing in a different path to us so that we can deal with this. We are in, our culture is changing now, and even high schools, it's good to see that some of our real traditional boards and institutions in the state are adapting, but our high schools right now are moving to portfolios as ways to evaluate students, and they don't all have to take the same test. They can do a audiovisual presentation to get their grade, or they can do there's a whole bunch of pathways for them to demonstrate knowledge and competence. So I think, you know, while the rest of us older people try to catch up with that new way of allowing everyone to be able to demonstrate their knowledge and competence, this is a really good first step. I agree with Senator Marty, you know, philosophically that if it's not going to work for you to begin with, why do we make people go down this path instead of saying this path is the one that's going to work for you? And yet, we're sort of in this transition period between sort of was Representative Murphy and I are both RNs, and we both took the nursing board examinations, and that was the only way you could get your license to practice. And we probably both know lots of wonderful nurses who have great nursing skills, who are very smart and would be fabulous nurses and just failed the board and were so humiliated they just went away. So, you know, I think we all understand there have to be different ways to deal with it. And yet today, I think this is a good transitional solution.
The only thing I'll add to this, I recognize that the board feels strongly about this and so on. I think it cheapens the test to say, well, you take a test and who cares if you pass it or not, you can go this alternative route. I don't disagree there's benefit to taking a test. I don't disagree that there's that it helps people. It's certainly an easier way to get the license than the alternative, less onerous for the applicant. So I think most people, maybe 99.7%, are going to take it anyway. It just bothers me to put in statute that part of the process is to fail a test, which is effectively what we're doing, because under the board's version of the way I'd prefer to do it, in both cases, you have to have the enhanced supervision. One requires you to fail a test first. But with that, unless somebody else would choose to move that language, let me ask Senate Counsel or House Research, what amendments would make it that we, one, the study is the A8 Amendment, but it has a long date in it, so if we could handle
it, it should be
2008. But the other amendments to meet the requirements of it, do you have that language?
Yeah, it's the A6 one.
A6? Maybe you could hand out those two amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A6 is the one that has taken the applicable exam administered by the board and has met the requirements, which apparently are every other requirement than that.
Senator Marty Villa, on the House side, we also prepared the same amendment.
Okay.
So just we're just being prepared here.
Okay.
There's a 1.3 on there.
Which line are you looking
on
at?
On your amendment.
Yeah, I think theirs is drafted to the Senate bill, and ours is drafted to the House. So,
Senate one is suggested to the House.
What's your amendment?
Maybe theirs is drafted to the Senate one. Do you have deleting a couple lines?
Yeah.
That would be drafted to the Senate one. So we'll, Senator Erickson Ropes, want to move the A6 amendment?
No, I think ours is drafted to the House. This is one sentence that's all I'm talking about. This is the issue applied for.
We better figure out what the difference is.
Did you slow down one of those?
Yeah. And you got a copy of it?
Does that matter?
No. A6, and there's another version that the House has.
A366?
That's the House.
Give me more copies.
Does it matter to you?
I think Jen's making some more. Either way, I think talks about the same thing, and you know, it seems like we have the A6. We should just go ahead and adopt the A6.
Okay. Senator Erickson Ropes moves the A6 amendment. Is there any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A8 amendment with a change to December 2008 on having the board study make recommendations by a year and a half from now on how to increase number of licensed social workers serving underserved communities. Representative Tao moves the A8 amendment with that.
Question.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Given the conversation we just had about alternative paths for people who are struggling with the board examination, here we're looking at people who are going to be serving the underserved communities, but what about the social worker themselves who might be struggling with the exam? What if you have my son, for example, who would rather go through this alternate path than take the test? Is he going to be able to do that, or is only social workers are going to be targeting underserved communities in terms of the study? So I'm just wondering if the study is very narrow, and we're focusing on who's going to be served at the end rather than the social workers themselves. And this gets back to John's philosophic question about, you know, we have really good people here, and if they meet every single requirement, they've passed, you know, they have their degree from the college, they've passed all the requirements, all these lists of provisions here, they meet everything except they have some trouble taking that board examination. Are they going to have the opportunity to do an alternate path?
This amendment wouldn't go that direction, but it's an appropriate subject. I mean, the amendment is partly to address the underserved communities, but I think your point is a legitimate one as well. Let's get reaction from the board, and maybe Senate Counsel could, House Research could look at language for that, if so.
Mr. Chair, members, Frank Merriman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. We wouldn't have any problem with broadening the scope of the study.
Broadening it to include, in addition to looking at how to better serve underserved communities, to look at alternative approaches for...
increasing the number of licensed social workers.
In general for... I think we might want to keep one in, though, for underserved communities because that's one issue, and the other issue is whether people who don't test well, because we like to think of these tests as very objective, and they're not always objective, and because different people think in different ways. And
I'm wondering, Ms. Kavanaugh, maybe you could help. If we just move including but not limited to behind licensed social workers. So then we would be increasing the number of licensed social workers, including and not limited to those who serve under served communities.
Okay. Is there a shortage of social workers overall?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a shortage of social workers in some areas, including especially rural outstate areas.
Mr. Chair. And
Representative Powell.
The issue that Senator Robes brought up, I don't think it's just for the social workers. I think it's across the whole medical profession. And so maybe with this, we keep the social worker the way it is. I don't mind the study here. And if we're going to do a study, a general study, to find alternative ways to address the LPN that you were talking about, and then other medical practitioners, I think we should look at that at a broader spectrum. It's maybe you might be able to include other groups as well in a bill for maybe you introduce, and then we could discuss that next year.
Thank you, Representative Tao. I agree. It certainly would have implications for many other boards. And yet this amendment just deals with a study. We're not putting anything into practice, or we're not changing any statutes, or just studying it. And it's possible that the Board of Social Work could lay some foundational work for other boards. Or, as you're suggesting, we could perhaps... Well, this task force, though, is the one that came up with lots of these recommendations. Is that correct? Did they deal with alternative paths for any other healthcare workers beyond just ELL?
Mr. Chair, members, maybe we could have Gary Cox from the department address that issue. He staffed the task force. Gary, would you be willing to respond to that question?
You'll hear it now. Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you. Mr. Cox, thank you. The question was, when the task force got together and were considering this idea of alternative paths, did they only look at the ELL population or as opposed to... other workers or students who have completed all the requirements but might just have a really difficult time passing the board examination? So that an alternative path might be available to anyone.
People who have the skills but don't, but they're,
all the requirements,
they learn and study different, pass testing, they have different passing tests. I mean,
learning styles.
Learning styles.
If I can just interject, we responded that there is a shortage of social workers in some area, and so they were raising the question as to whether or not there was any determination that there was a shortage for other professions. And
I think yours wasn't so much whether there's a shortage, but whether you looked at other people who may not have language and cultural differences, but who have learning styles that are different and have difficulty with tests. Did you look at that at all in the board?
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson Ropes, the task force did not look at that issue.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to understand that, if I understand the question correctly, we are contemplating a study of alternative routes to licensure for social workers that might be practicing in underserved areas. Is that correct?
No, my question was, as they're studying about how to bring aboard social workers that do serve underserved, mm-hmm. could they also look at alternative paths for any social worker who's met every single requirement but it's just having trouble with the testing, regardless of whether they're going to serve underserved areas or they might be serving.
What I'm going to suggest and see if this works is that we would adopt the A8 amendment and that Senator Erickson Ropes, we could have either House Research or Senate Counsel, where we're going through the rest of the bill, look at another sentence we could add to this, ask the board to also study the possibility of alternative routes to licensure. And because I think Representative Tao's point is this does apply to across the board in terms of licensure things, and it probably is more appropriate to do in a broader legislation, but it wouldn't hurt to do here, because if the board looks at that and they say, hey, yeah, if this is an appropriate way to go for licensure for underserved communities, we got to recognize some people it's not cultural differences. For some people it might just be, I don't know if you'd call it learning disability, but different styles of learning and testing. Would that make sense for you to work with somebody, get an extra sentence?
Right, with the board.
That would be fine.
Ms. Kimball.
And Chair and members, as an association rep, this is something that we have discussed among our associations, both of those things. What Representative Tao brought up, I think if it would be good for social workers to have an alternative path, I think other professions as well.
So if you want to pursue that, maybe whoever, House Research or Senate Counsel, whoever is not going through the bill, as we continue on, maybe can look for another sentence to add to this amendment so they would also take a look at the general question. But for now, should we, Representative Tao, we want to move the A8 amendment?
Sure.
With the December 15, 2008 timeline? Is there any discussion of the A8 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then, Ms. Aves, if you can, if Kevin, are you going to continue going through? I don't care who goes through which. But.
Mr. Chair, the next is also the Board of Social Work. That's House Section 60 to 63 and Senate 50 to 53, and things are identical.
Senate Representative Tao moves Senate House Sections 60 to 63. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Recodification of licensure.
That House Section 64 to 122, Senate 54 to 112, there are technical differences, which the House, we're recommending the House version, and otherwise they're identical.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Now they can carry the recodification of the social work licensure for two sessions running. Can I just ask if they don't recodify it for one?
I hope they
that.
Your laughter, which means maybe they understand. Representative Abler moves the House language from 64 to 122, which is summary says the House is correct, so the Senate must be incorrect. Representative Abler moves the House language.
But they didn't fail.
We are.
There's no failure.
We did fail, but we failed to get it right. They would be back to recodify it again if we don't take the House language. Representative Abler moves that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Board of Pharmacy.
House Section 123 to 129 is identical to the Senate's same sections.
Tom moves the identical language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Then the next two sections, House Section 130 and 131, are House only. And this Section 130 requires at least two board members to agree to dismiss a complaint and a review by the Attorney General on request of the complainant. 131 requires a licensing board to provide a person making a complaint with a written description of the complaint process and the actions of the board and written notice of the right to appeal the board's decision to the AG's office within 30 days of the notice.
Who knows about this one?
This is Representative Walker's provision. It's very important to the House member. Keep this in there. And we just got word that, like Representative Hunley always says, if the department likes it, it doesn't cost a thing. They don't. It costs a lot of money. And we just found out that the board We just found out yesterday
yes.
that it might cost something. And so, I, you know, I would prefer that we keep the language. And, but if we'll make, we could add some comfort language to tell finance to review this in a year. I think finance, I got word from finance that they could absorb this this year.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fishback.
Mr. Chair, Representative, maybe you can answer it. I know it wasn't your bill, but what was the reasoning that we, why did we need the change? And what was the testimony maybe? And
The policy issue, independent of the money issue, is that people make a complaint to a board. A board are independent state agencies, and they're overseeing. There's no higher power than the board. You know, so they're the government unappoint people, but typically they have their own. They're the independent themselves. And if there's a complaint about some issue from one of the ICCs, then they usually appoint a committee of two who will review it. And then decide if they should go further or not. And the Attorney General may or may not be part of that review, as I understand. One of the bigger ones, they bring the Attorney General right away, that's some sex thing or something. But if it's just a matter about a bookkeeping matter or something, they just do it internally. And they may make the suggestion to the member that they fix up their records and then take a course. Or they may go up higher to have a sanction of some kind. In the event that they would dismiss it, sometimes the people... Sometimes boards aren't very forthcoming in letters of describing what happened, even how hard they worked, and that it was actually quite thoroughly reviewed. They have a standard letter. And the people who made the complaint don't feel like justice was served. And this would allow, I think really they can appeal to the full board, which is not known to most of the people. It was thought that if that were made known, that people would all appeal to the full board, which would cost a great deal of money. And so this was language that was put in place that upon the request of the complainant that the AG could review it to see if there's anything. And that was done. So it would be it would go to a whole other entity for scrutiny independent of the board itself. That's the policy. And there was a case involving a child of one of the legislators involved in some of this. So that's how it got to the Kinship legislature.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fishback.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, do we know, well, first of all, they already have the ability to go to the Attorney General's office, but obviously...
I don't believe so.
No, they don't. Okay, I thought you said they did. So how does the AG's office feel, and is that where the fiscal issue comes in?
Yeah, the finance is here, so they can, but I mean, the town knows about the AG. I didn't discuss with the AG at all.
Okay.
Somebody else did.
The AG language was some, I think it was a request by the AG to work out this language with the author. And so all of these language have been worked out with affected individuals so far. I mean, we have come a long way to get to this point. I don't remember completely, but I think this was a request by the AG to have that piece in there.
Good morning. My name is Doug Green with the Department of Finance and Executive Budget Officer oversee the health licensing boards. This just came to my attention late Friday and Monday as well, and I apologize we don't have a formal fiscal note for the committee. I have been working with boards yesterday to try to determine what this cost might be and to explain what the cost could potentially be is if complainants who've had their cases dismissed have the opportunity to appeal it. It's the feeling of the executive directors for the boards that people will take that opportunity. Anytime there's additional work, with the Attorney General, those are billable hours. Now, Attorney General's costs to the health licensing boards are not direct costs to the boards. Those costs are borne solely by the Attorney General. However, whenever Attorney General is reviewing a case that's pertaining to the board, they also incur some costs in things like consulting fees for expert witnesses, expert staff time to investigate it. So there are some direct costs there. It's what I was, just to be very open with the what I was struggling with yesterday, is this something that we can safely assume that complainants will, or that we can put a percentage on the number of people, complainants, that will appeal? I think it is the executive director's feeling that a good majority would take that opportunity, which would increase costs both to the Attorney General, which again is not a direct cost to the health licensing boards, but they do have other direct costs such as those things that I mentioned. We haven't finalized a fiscal note and what that might be. So those are the issues around this provision right now. I'm sorry to interrupt, person. Looking at the preliminary fiscal note, I assume to put it in, you know, just in some sort of format where it's standard assumptions made. And the last part was our cases reviewed by the AGO prior to final disposition. About half of the boards have responded, and about 7 out of 8 said yes, they are reviewed by the AGO before final disposition. I don't know if that has a bearing on this provision or not, but that'd be instructive to the committee.
Do you kind of have a sense of the total cost, maybe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tao, I'm hesitant to give a cost right now without fully vetting, you know, the fiscal notes and the assumptions. I certainly, you know, work on that first thing this morning, you know, with the directors and try to ascertain what the cost might be. And it should be relatively simple. We know how much the Attorney General charges the boards for each hour of work, and I think they have a pretty good idea about, for each hour of Attorney General's costs, how much the expenses that they incur in terms of staff time, in terms of expert witnesses, and those other things.
How many people do you anticipate, let's say if this bill goes into effect July for 1 year, how do you think that will be a dramatic number? Or I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tao, that's the sticking point in whether we can put an accurate value on this fiscal note. Not to get into too many details of, you know, what we fiscal note, but it boils down to a primary effect and a secondary effect. We only fiscal note what a primary effect would be of a fiscal note. This is kind of getting into the secondary effect realm, which we tend to explain in the narrative, but say we don't assign a cost to it, because what we're doing here is somewhat quantifying human behavior. We're trying to estimate how many people will appeal. And that's, for fiscal note purposes, that can be sometimes not the most accurate thing to do. But I tend to think that, you know, there would be increased costs, especially by the Attorney General and those other direct costs.
Mr. Chair, why don't we do this? It's okay with the rest of the senators. Move the effective date 2 years from now, and at least allow the author, have the language in there, allow the author to go look for some money. And if there isn't any money, then I think we could always look at taking out the language.
Let's hear from Mr. Merriman what impact like on that board.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, Frank Merriman, Executive Director of the Board of Social Work. The Executive Director has discussed some versions of this proposal earlier on, and we did not have a problem with the first part of this. Requires a board to provide a person making a complaint with a written description of the complaint process and actions of the board. The part about the appeal to the AG does give us some difficulties. We have two difficulties. The first one is the one that Doug has highlighted, which is the cost. And there are some boards that have an enormous number of complaints, and if you had a lot of complaint appeals to the AG's office, and the AG is obviously very expensive, it would definitely have a significant impact on the board's expenditures. And concern number two is, and I have not really looked at this issue, but I'm puzzled about what you're trying to accomplish here, because it seems, I'm wondering how it syncs with the existing process. I mean, licensees, there's an existing process already in place where if a board takes a disciplinary action against the licensee can appeal that decision already to the Office of Hearing Examiners. And so I'm just wondering if there's some confusion here about who has the ultimate authority. Is it the Office of Hearing Examiners? Is it the Attorney General? Is it the board? Who is it? And to me, it makes it a little bit more confusing.
So, Mr. Merriman, so right now, if I file a complaint and it's dismissed by at least two board members, my recourse is to go to the Board of Administrative Hearings.
Well, you have that right as a licensee if disciplinary action is taken against you.
Mr. Chair, as a licensee, as a citizen who's making a complaint, it does not sound like you have this right. This is for citizens who have complaints against a licensee.
Just to follow up on that question, Mr. Merriman, if a citizen doesn't like what you did, that really thinks there was something that you didn't do your work about, and you dismiss their complaint, do they have any recourse?
They can contact their state legislator.
So here we are doing that. But short of it, I'm trying to be too facetious. This is actually a very serious matter. So they could appeal to the full board.
Yes.
But short of that, then when the full board says no, then there's no more appeal that they have.
That's correct. The licensee, as we've indicated, has the right to appeal to the Office of Administrative Hearings in case of an adverse action taken against the licensee. But if you're a citizen and the board does not act, the board is the final authority.
Thank you. And that's the challenge. And I don't know. And just having been tied to boards and spent some time on this, when the AG appears, it's not on behalf of the AG's office. It's on behalf of a lawyer consultant for the board. But the AG is not formally involved, I don't believe, unless there's some criminal charge and they would choose to weigh in on that somehow. I think that's... And so this creates a distinct responsibility of the elected, of another branch of government to oversee if there's some egregious thing. And I don't know where we're going to go with this today, but if you can take back to your executive directors, I think you need several letters. One letter that would say, there's nothing we found. We found nothing. We looked hard. We turned over the rocks. There was nothing to find. The person is a good clinician. And because the letter sometimes says, we found not enough evidence to proceed, which is a different letter than the one I just suggested. The second letter could say, you know, we need more smoke and fire. If we can find some stuff, we're going after this person. And the third one is, they've lost their license and we're putting them in jail or something. Some way to have some, you know, three or four letters that you could agree with the board. That's what didn't happen in this matter, and that's the way you got to this hearing, as I understand it.
If I could just respond to that, the one problem that we do have in terms of the content of the letters is data practices requirements, and so we're limited in terms of what we can say. And we find that frustrating, too, because we know it's got to be very difficult for a complainant who receives a letter that tells them nothing except sort of the outcome and nothing about anything else. But we really are restricted in terms of what we can say because of data practices.
But even with data practices, isn't there some way you could say, look, you know, we welcome more information, but we don't have, I mean, the language you use, there's not enough evidence to whatever. Saying we welcome more input would give the person some sense that you didn't have enough information as opposed to forget it. I mean, a complainant would have reason to want to know, is it worth pursuing further with the board, or is it, we found no evidence of what you're saying is true. Isn't there a way you can do something between one letter saying this is the case?
Yes. in subtle ways. And we do, by the way, work with the Attorney General's office very closely on all of these questions. And so we'd be happy to work with the Attorney General's office, too, to see if we could. And we're also working on trying to do some things that are more in common with all of the boards so that we don't have these kind of differences from one board to another. So we'd be happy to work on that. But, you know, to us, they're perhaps more complicated issues than they appear to you.
Mr. Chair, maybe someone could explain to me the section where we remove the language regarding the designee of the Attorney General must review. And I guess I'm wondering why that language is leaving, because this has, and I don't know the exact statutes that are cited there, but it looks like they're more egregious crimes and sexual contact. And so why are we removing language that would require the AG's office to look into those when before a dismissal?
I was part of this. I don't remember specifically, but I think that the assumption was that those would be certainly ones that they would want to review anyway. So I think it was considered redundant.
Okay,
because upon the request part, so I think that was.
Well, but Mr. Chair, Representative Abler. Okay. Well, I guess I'm just because we've changed it to upon the request from must, and I guess there was some reason that these crimes in particular were highlighted that the AG must review those, and I guess I don't want to screw up what
no,
was worked on.
I didn't write this, I think that's consistent. I think
your point is right that I'm assuming, just guessing, that the House, whoever it was with the amendment, thought that we're requiring a review by the Representative Attorney General's office in all cases, but as you point out, upon request of a complainant, and even if the request is not there, the existing law required it in any case for here. So I think if we go forward with this, at minimum, we should reinstate the stricken language, which doesn't harm the new language. But
Mr. Chair, as originally drafted, when the language was stricken, the upon the request of the complainant was not in there. That was language that was added later, kind of on the fly.
So that would explain exactly what she is saying is the case. So we would want to reinstate that regardless.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. What's the House think we should try and do?
That would give a chance to vet the cost, and if there was a cost, then be part of a department bill that they say we can't do that. But I think it would also, 2 years out, as you have a 4-year change, and it gives time to talk about it. And, so I think there may be a better way than this, but I think sometimes if you don't put it in writing, it never happens, and people get busy with other things. And 2 years out is a long time. It's two entire legislative sessions. And I think that nobody intends to have the boards, you know, be crushed by this burden. But I think what the message here is, a citizen who feels like they didn't get heard needs to be heard somehow more than here's the letter. And I think that's what this would accomplish. And if there's a better way, I think that I'm way open to that. I think the senators and all members are open.
So, Representative, were you moving?
I think we need to have language that says that this section is effective July 1st, 2009, into the next
planning. Representative Abor moves that we reinstate the stricken language on line 14 to 22, and that we make sections 130 and 131 effective. How about August 1st of?
Okay,
August 1st of 2009.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
Does Section 131, would that create a fiscal note? Because I'm just, you know, if they're already doing letters, maybe we can just let that one go into effect.
Except the second half of that is tied to the first one.
Well, written notice must advise the right to appeal.
I agree with that.
Representative Abler was talking about the letters, and I was just thinking if there was a way we could get those letters improved
Senator,
before 09.
That upon enactment of, after today, I think the letters are going to improve.
Come back next year if they don't. That's a good.
I'll predict that right now.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baylor, just a comment on that language. If it's not implemented for another 2 years, the boards won't have any experience with how many people will actually appeal. So I don't know if we would be able to work out a better fiscal note in that time. I mean, I think we could work out a pretty good fiscal in the next 24 hours that probably wouldn't change over the next 2 years.
We're getting done today. Okay. I think that we don't have the authority in this committee to incur a fiscal note tonight. And I think that it's this message, I think, if it's not if you're a fiscal guy, but the policy message is we need a way to address this matter. And if this is nothing else, it's a letter. And I would predict there'll be a bill next year from the executive directors of the board saying how they're going to want to address the role of a complainant in the process. And I think that this language may actually never go into effect. That's why my expectation. And if they like it, they'll go and they'll absorb the cost. And if indeed 7 of 8 are already reviewed by an AGO, then reviewing one more out of 8 isn't going to be very much cost. And they may just find another way to do their business, which is neutral in the money. And so I think that they'll anticipate, they'll be able to look at these complaints a little bit differently. And I think as they respond, I think sometimes they do respond in a better letter. There's just no appeal. They say, well, I mean, in my respect, you did harm, but we looked and there was, they followed every law, and they did the reporting, and we can't tell you all things you found out, but believe me, we looked, and there's just nothing to be found. They're not going to feel that way. And that's what I think. When you give a letter saying, if we had more evidence, we would have done something, they're going to feel every one of them. And that's what I, and so I, if that's, I hope you're comfortable with that. That's the best I can tell you at this point. Thank you.
They may not have a better sense of how much it would cost, but it would presumably have the executive directors looking, is there an alternative way if this is going to be, if we think this will be expensive and there may be a fiscal note in a couple of days. And the boards, I think the legislature would encourage the boards to come back with an alternative if they think it's going to be a problem. Representative Abel, you want to pursue your amendment then?
I will. I'd like to do that.
Representative Abel moves sections 130 and 131 effective August 1st, 2009, with the stricken language reinstated. Further discussion on that motion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next is House Section 132 and Senate Section 120. These are the sunsets on the advisory theories, and they're identical.
Yeah, I think that was what the original bill was.
That's
a one-page bill that, yeah. That grew, multiplied. Representative Tao moves Section 132. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next section is adding the licensed professional clinical counselors to mental health professionals in the public program. That is House only. The Senate bill was laid over because of the fiscal costs.
Yeah, I have an amendment to those dates.
Representative,
we have to discuss this section too. And I didn't see the fiscal note, but I know that in the committee, when we took this up on the House side, that the testimony wasn't an incidental cost.
No, it's not. It's
$1 billion. It seems to have grown like the House. So maybe the department, if you want to come.
How much is it?
It's said $5 million.
It's about it's over $1 million in the office when they start.
He told the crew that you're in
I should. Do you have a copy of the fiscal?
We're getting.
I've got one in my office.
The fiscal note.
The fiscal note. Do you want me to go?
Before they get to the money, so what the policy is.
Yeah, maybe we hear what's going on.
The need for it, and this is the licensed professional counselor, the godmother, the god senator of this was Senator Cascade, and then I helped her get this done, and it was not very easy. It was anticipated that there would be way more of these licensees coming forward than who did. This board also incurred a considerable debt by joining with the Alcohol and Drug Council. There's $1 million debt. The fees were adopted. They reduced their debt for $600,000, and they're on about a 15-year glide slope to try to get out of debt. The fees we adopted are insufficient to actually get them out of debt in 5 years, but at least they're moving in the right direction, so people are happy with that effort. And the hope was by creating a second-level licensure that the task force that you heard about earlier worked on to try to get the credentials so they would be suitable to be in the MA system, to be defined as a mental health professional. They created a second-level licensure called the LPCC, which takes about an extra year or something to get. They draw on helping these folks to actually develop a livelihood and serve the people, is that they could be included in medical assistance and then work in clinics and serve the people that they're meant to be serving. That's the challenge. And in my mind, they should be included yesterday if they can get the credential. In testimony, which generally is coming back, not the current one, the thought was that this would be supplanted. They might see one provider than the other one. These are the low-cost providers, not by the way, that we're going to be ramping up. And that they would be visiting some of these and not some other licensed professionals, or they may serve underserved areas where people are actually winding up in hospitals because they're at crisis stages. And so I think the department accurately then reflect the dynamic nature of the system for once, and I respected that. Saying that in the net, really, it's not going to cost any more money. Upon further review of the department, I think it's cost some more costs that they can incur. We'll hear from that in a second. But in terms of the policy, to include these folks in MA is exactly the right thing to do. It's a matter of how you afford it and all that. But they're going to have a credential that everybody signed off on.
That's a general fund.
That was incredible and invaluable. So that's the policy of it.
And now we can talk about the new
channel. Go ahead.
Chairman Marty, my name is Don Allen. I'm with the Chemical and Mental Health Services Administration at the Department of Human Services. The analysis of the bill as it currently stands with the effective date of January of 2010 for these licensed professional clinical counselors becoming mental health professionals and billing MA is about $1.3 million, all those costs in the out biennium.
Mr. Allen, what about his Representative Abler's comment that the service is being provided now by more expensive providers?
We based our analysis on what happened when licensed marriage and family therapists became mental health professionals a few years ago, 2001 through 2006. We made a modest estimate of cost at those times. The actual cost that really showed up exceeded our estimate many times over. The situation that we have in the state is that there simply is a shortage of mental health professionals, and the bulk of the new capacity goes to, in one way or another, serving more people. People currently don't get as many appointments or as timely an appointment that they need, and it ends up being soaked up in that way. The fiscal note does assume that about 30% of the billings will be replacing existing capacity, but that 70% will be actually in growth and access.
And there's all that testimony.
Mr. Senator Marty, the Chair Marty, my name is Nick Reese. I'm on the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy, and have been meeting with DHS on this. And our executive director, Carrie Rexico, could not be here today, and she's a little bit more up to it. But there's a family illness that's involved in this. Since talking to DHS, I think there's a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, in terms of I'm on the faculty at Winona State University, and in southeastern Minnesota and in some of the other areas where mental health services are probably a little bit less available I'm a licensed psychologist. I'm a licensed professional counselor. About two-thirds of the licensed psychologists in Minnesota are in the metro area. So when you get to outside, I think it's hit more. I don't know exactly. I trust Don and Gary in their formulas. But I think the immediate impact of this is this will be felt probably sooner in greater Minnesota. And a lot of the providers, as opposed to, you know, sometimes the question is, you know, are you going to get people to move out of the Twin Cities? Well, this is a group that doesn't have to move out of the Twin Cities. You know, they've been practicing, some without a license, for a long time. They come through programs like St. Cloud State, Moorhead State. There are private, you know, like St. Thomas, St. Mary's. But there's also Mankato State and Winona State. So these are people that have trained in the area and are likely to stay there and serve the people in that area. Another thing that I'm not sure, and Don could probably speak to this, in Minnesota now, psychology is a single-level licensure. The master's degree people that were trained in psychology are probably getting near the retirement age, and they're, as opposed to you know, licensed professional counselors, there's nobody going to be replacing them in those areas. And a lot of them are in the outstate areas. And I know for certain up in north central Minnesota, in southeastern Minnesota, and also in southwestern Minnesota. So, but Don can speak to the fact of replacing the LPs there. So the board supports this as a matter of getting people to serve the needs of the community, which is our mission as a board, right, is to serve underserved populations and bring as many competent people into the system as we can.
So to summarize, doing this would actually be cheaper for every hour of service than not doing it, but because there are going to be a lot more hours of service provided because a lot of people aren't getting the mental health care they need, that's why the fiscal note is higher. Sir Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it may be that we have a fiscal note attached to this, but again, I think when we look at the whole system of health care, the people that may not have access now because we don't have these LPCCs out there are deteriorating and winding up on public programs and not taking the medications or not getting the intervention that they would need and wind up costing the whole system a lot of money, as opposed to, you know, 1.3, I think is what you mentioned. You know, if you put that into the program, you can wind up preventing a whole lot of additional mental health costs to the system. So I'm not sure, again, if we're at the point where, as a conference committee, we're stuck with the fiscal note that's attached to policy, but we certainly need this piece in the healthcare delivery system.
St. Coates, you had a comment on the timing of...
Well, Mr. Chair, yeah, I mean, it's just not, it's not being tracked. It's not being paid for. And you've got, you know, an 08 cost here that isn't being tracked right now in the Health and Human Services. Well, if you change it to 09, I believe then there's going to be some cost in fiscal year 08, and there's clearly going to be, if it's changed to January 1 of 09, then there's going to be fiscal cost.
July.
I think currently the bill is January 1, 2010.
Right. Oh, and it's changed to July 1. So then it would be...
Oh, this is the A370 amendment,
right,
you're talking about? Actually, no, July 1 is the beginning of the...
okay, so then it would be the next fiscal year.
Yeah, FY10 fiscal year, there's generally a two-month lag in claims.
Okay, so and the tail costs.
The administrative costs, right. Chairman Marty, I looked quickly at the amendment, and from the information in the existing fiscal note, I'd estimate the cost of the amendment to be about another $200,000 in the output.
So it's partly, and St. Council, you had said something about that one of the reasons this was not included in any budget was fairly late. Or?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. On the Senate, it was, and I don't think anybody disagrees with this. You know, I don't want to speak for Senator Berglund, but I think in committee she was very positive at this, but it just came in too late, and I think she basically said, well, we'll do it next year. You know, when it can get kind of put into the pot and paid for. But...
Well, Senator, I think that we're stuck here. I have a sense of that. I think somehow we're going to, we can, the boards can absorb the anticipatory, you know, thing about that last fiscal note, because that's in a special revenue fund, and it may have cost, they'll come back and talk about it. This one here, I haven't heard anything yet, but you, Senator, might consider this bill has some money in it. As we might hope it to do, and I pains me to say that. I don't know what to do, but I don't think we can do this session as the author.
I think that's do it next year. I mean, I'm with
you. If we were the way we'd be getting around fiscal by delaying its effective date, this seems to be a fairly high priority for a lot of people if we do wait till next year and they get the money then.
It's going to take them a while to get this licensed clinical counselors up and running anyway, so.
Senator, if we did it in 2011, would we be grasped by the governor or something? Or is that a sin that, that they're found out? This horizon business, beyond the horizon, we don't care about cliffs. They're concerned about cliffs over the horizon.
Representative Abel moves that we do this soon, right?
Yeah, that we look at this next time. I don't know what to do about it. I don't see the way out.
I have a feeling it's next year. Yeah. But if we make sure our conferees, Health and Human Service budget folks, understand the feeling about it, that may help next year. So no motion on the sections 133 to 141.
The next one is... It's a Senate only. It's Senate 121, and it includes the licensed professional counselors and the definition of professional services in the Professional Firms Act. And that's pretty standard.
Oh, we have no problem.
Yeah, that's fine.
Isn't that in that letter?
This is Senator Woods.
No, that's not the one. No, that's
in their bill. We just couldn't tell about it. We were under pressure to try to keep it.
Representative Abel moves the Senate language in 121. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Tom moves the identical language on assistant physical therapists. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Senate 123, and that's the limited exception for the social worker. That's the Senator Lori's bill.
Yeah, that's the Senator Lori one. Yeah, you guys have heard from that. Representative Tao moves Senate file section 123. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. Hey, so what's the Senate's correct on this next one, huh?
Well, in the amendment that we adopted with the X-ray operators, if you take the House 143, then that amends it and puts the correct That's part of the amendment that was taking the. So if you need to adopt House 143.
Got to accept the House language anyway.
Well, then we correct it.
We have to adopt
we
their language.
Correct it. It was already in the amendment that we adopted. It was part of that.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to take the Senate correction to the House language. And okay. So go duly and flag it over for it.
So we do have to take
143
here. Representative Abel moves section 143. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The last two sections are also identical. Representative Murphy moves the identical sections. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Yes. And Senator Erickson Rope said she'd be right back down here, but you know what committee she went? Is she on the Health and Human Services? Where?
No, not on the House.
She went somewhere to another.
Oh,
Finance? Yeah. Well,
Senator Marty. I was just checking with the counselor. They request a couple of technical changes.
To which sections?
Page 32. I believe section
if the house is?
Yeah.
Page 32.
Line 32.28.
Okay.
After license, you want to add professional.
Second licensed.
Conversion from licensed professional counselor to licensed professional clinical counselor, the LPC to LPCC.
Right.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay. I believe we got one more. Sorry, we got to do. I was giving this. Earlier this morning, page 34, line 34.16, before the word this, 16, there's a whole sentence that I'll read it and then I'll give it to counselor and they can, an applicant for licensure as a licensed professional clinical counselor must present evidence of completion of a degree equivalent to that required in section 148B.5301 Subdivision 1, paragraph 3. And yes, you could help explain it.
So, in effect, we've got the LPC as the first sentence. The second sentence would be the LPCC.
Right. It's because we right now we don't have authority to review degrees that we seek from other countries. So it's just to allow us to do that. I mean, it refers it back to the content requirements of the education.
Unless it's different.
This education.
So in effect, the two sentences are virtually identical, but one's dealing with LPCCs, and it's 5301 instead of 53. Okay, Ms. Ames, you've got the language in it.
I do.
Okay. It seems to work. Is there any discussion of Representative Tao moves that new sentence in there? Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Got more?
That's it.
There's one more matter that staff just went to get an amendment. Yesterday, I think, on the last bill, there's a woman whose husband's in Iraq, and she's one more year to do something.
Okay. You're getting the language?
Yes, it's on the way.
Okay. We have Ms. Aves has some language for Sir Erickson Ropes's amendment, which was to the A8 amendment, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it was. You had asked that we develop another sentence that would look at alternative paths to licensure. The proposed sentence is, the study shall also explore alternative paths to licensure for applicants who may have difficulty obtaining a traditional license.
Yeah, but they're still labeling people that way. I mean, can't we just say alternative paths to licensure, period?
As opposed to what?
Designating who it affects. I mean, maybe you're just a traditional A student, and you just don't want to take the boards. You miss the boards because your parent is dying, or, I mean, who knows what reason. They would want to choose an alternate path.
So what wording in that? Could you read the proposed amendment?
What I hear the senator saying is she would like it to read, the study shall also explore alternative paths to licensure, period.
And why does it have to simply be tied to the fact that you're foreign language speaker, or that you failed a test, or, I mean, could it be just an alternative path to licensure as long as it's as rigorous as the current pathway?
You know, but again, we're focusing, if again, some of the board is here, but it sounds like, an alternative path to licensure, does it mean you don't go to school for so many years, you don't do this?
No.
You mean, as opposed to the test.
Just the
I
test.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying, should we reflect that in the sentence?
Meeting all other requirements. Well,
an
yes.
alternative to the test somehow.
It goes back to the failing the test again.
I think you should say alternative to the test. It's not, in other words, it's instead of the failure of the test, it's if somebody for some other reason wants to, if they have another way that's equally rigorous or more rigorous for people who, for one reason or another.
Well, what do we say for those underserved communities in that sentence?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what the sentence will say as it was orally amended is the Board of Social Work shall study and make recommendations to the legislature by December 15, 2008 on how to increase the number of licensed social workers, including but not limited to those serving underserved community, culturally and ethnically diverse communities.
That was what you had proposed, what you had talked about earlier. I kind of like the idea of having the, one is to deal with the underserved communities, but in other words, you're...
What I'm just saying is, including but not limited to people who are going to be serving with those areas. So I'm okay with what you read. Does that make sense?
And which, not
which
add
version?
A second sentence.
Not, not add your new...
Okay. Let's read what... Because all we did was, the language is there, we just put the including but not limited to in a different area.
Right. So what we have is, the Board of Social Work shall study and make recommendations to the legislature by December 15, 2008 on how to increase the number of licensed social workers, including but not limited to those serving underserved communities and culturally and ethnically diverse communities.
One comment of that, though. You're interested in people who have alternative routes to the test. What they've got now for ELL people is an alternative route to passing the test. The language that you're proposing to amend, if we do that, is just how to increase the numbers of social workers, which they could just as well come back and, well, we got to enhance the size of the social worker programs at the higher education institutions, which is not what you're trying to get at. That would be one way of getting at the underserved populations.
That does not include examination.
That's why I really think you might keep the sentence we have here as is, because that's a somewhat different... Your issue of alternatives to the test is one way they could work at addressing, and one way I think they would be likely to look at on how to address the need to increase numbers of underserved communities.
I see.
Do think it's probably worth having a separate sentence because,
testing.
Yes, statement about alternatives to to a standardized test is a means of getting the licensure. Do you?
I agree with what you're saying.
Can you read that again?
Do you want to ask me to ensure that it does not include a standardized examination?
You want to add that, propose, read the sentence for, it'll be an additional sentence then at the end.
The study shall also explore alternative paths to licensure that does not include a standardized examination.
Senator Erickson moves that is.
Okay. But did we decide earlier we wanted them to at least take a test once?
I wouldn't get into that here.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. This is the study.
This is just a study of alternative means, because I think many of us recognize with school kids we're trying to find alternatives because not everybody learns the same, tests the same. Mm-hmm. And tests that we once thought were objective may be very much affected by culture and other things.
It's just a study of... They come back, we don't like it, we don't have to implement it.
Is this okay with you guys?
Representative Murphy, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any opposition to this, but I think this sentence represents a large policy question, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That may be, conducted by the licensing board may present some issues.
Yeah, they may. When they present it, if it would just it would take a lot of looking, and at that time, it may be something somebody would want to offer an amendment, not just affecting social work.
It's a whole new field that's unplowed as of yet.
Representative Erickson Ropes moves that new sentence that was read a minute ago. Does anybody want to hear it again?
No.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Representative Abler.
This passed the House floor yesterday. It's in the licensing bill. But this is a more appropriate place for it to be. This gives a one-year extension on this was a swinging project. I don't even know if it's his constituent or somehow he got into this. But this this is a woman, her husband's in Iraq, and she needs time to get her third degree of her license. So there is no controversy.
Yeah. And I spoke in support of it, and I think it's able to give her
handle it covers one person.
That right. Extra time to pass her test.
Okay. Somebody at Red Wing, it sounds like. On the House, Representative Abel moves the new amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Any other amendments from committee members or questions? Is there anybody in the audience who's concerned about something that was done here today that we've goofed up on? Is there any further business for the conference committee?
Chair, you didn't ask for compliments. What did we do right?
What did we do right?
You gave them the opportunity to come up and, you know, rip on us, but we'd like compliments, too.
Senator, we can say, how did we not fail?
With that, what we should do here is tentatively adopt the conference report and then, well, adopt the conference report and then after it's prepared, we'll just ship it around and sign it if people see fit. Representative Tao moves the conference committee report as proposed right now. Is there any discussion on that motion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Any further?
Thank you. With that, no further business, the conference committee is adjourned.